Good morning, everyone. Please be seated. The first case on calendar this morning is Santa Margarita Ranch versus District Court, Tule Lake Horseradish. Is counsel ready to proceed?
You are, Your Honor.
Please do so. You filed a reply brief, so you have the option of reserving some time for rebuttal. Would you like to?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I've already spoken to the clerk and requested 2 minutes, if that pleases the court.
Very well.
Okay. Justices of the court, good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Roderick Carucci. I'm representing the petitioner in this matter, Santa Margarita Ranch, and the individually named defendants, Ken and Mark Mahan. With me is co-counsel Wayne Peterson, and Ken Mahan is sitting back here in the gallery. I believe this case, well, it's all about offers of judgment, and I believe it raises some issues of first impression for the court. There was an offer of judgment in this case. The offer of judgment was for $20,000. The offer of judgment was accepted by the defendants. They promptly filed their acceptance with the court. That was timely done. They promptly tendered a cashier's check for $20,000 within 6 days after filing the acceptance with the court. The offer of judgment provided that it was for $20,000, and it provided that the plaintiffs or the right of the plaintiffs pursuant to NRS 18.010 Part 2A is preserved intact following defendant's acceptance and filing of this joint unapportioned offer of judgment with the clerk of this court. Based upon that, there were clarifying emails exchanged between counsel that same afternoon. And those clarifying email made it very clear that
why should we consider the clarifying emails? In my mind, if you serve an offer of judgment, you are stuck with it, even if it was erroneous. You are stuck with it for 10 days if you're the serving party of the offer of judgment. Why should not an ostensibly unqualified acceptance that is filed with the court and served be considered as the sole other document in assessing whether there was an agreement or not?
I don't think it needs to be, Your Honor. My clients accepted the offer of judgment, and I'm perfectly comfortable not considering any clarifying document. I think the offer of judgment speaks for itself. It makes an offer. It says they reserve the right to move the court for an award of attorney's fees.
And where in 18.010 do you find a requirement of a judgment being entered in order to move for attorney's fees?
That's the area that requires some clarification by the court, because there's some reconciliation required between the wording of the different rules. There's Rule 68, there's 18.010, and there's 17.115. And 17.115 and Rule 68 both provide that upon demand of the party accepting the offer of judgment, they make demand to the clerk of the court, not by motion to the judge, but by demand to the clerk of the court that the matter be dismissed. That clearly reads there. 18.0102A provides that a party obtaining a judgment for $20,000 or less may request attorney's fees from the court. And my client's acceptance specifically.
No, it does not exactly say judgment. It says,
let me see.
In addition to cases where an allowance is authorized by specific statute, the court may make an allowance of attorney's fees to a prevailing party.
Correct.
I don't see that the statute by its terms requires an actual entry of judgment.
Okay, that is correct. However, if we go back, and here's where the judgment of the court is required. If we go back to the Office of Judgment, it says, the clerk shall enter judgment according to the terms of the offer unless, two, Part two, the party pays the amount of the offer within a reasonable time after the offer is accepted, regardless of whether a judgment or dismissal is entered pursuant to paragraph A, the court shall award costs, that isn't disputed, in accordance with NRS 18.110 to each party who is entitled to be paid under terms of the offer, unless the terms of the offer preclude a separate award of costs. Any judgment entered pursuant to this section shall be deemed a compromise settlement. If it's a compromise settlement, I don't believe we have a prevailing party. And if we have a right to
well, certainly the federal gloss on the counterpart, the cognate Rule 68 in the federal court, it's not unusual to say I'm going to offer judgment against you, to have judgment taken against me in the amount of X, with the court to determine the reasonable attorney's fees to which I'm entitled.
That is correct. The federal rule is different. Number one, a plaintiff can't make an offer of judgment in federal court. Number two, in federal court, it is a judgment. Our rule differs in that regard. And in if we were in federal court, we wouldn't be dealing with a statute that provides that a prevailing party with a judgment or an award, a prevailing party with who has not recovered more than $20,000. There is no similar federal statute that I'm aware of. That's unique in Nevada. It's a good statute.
But if it were in federal court on a diversity case,
yes,
the statute would apply, assuming you could get there on less than $75,000.
True. I agree with that. What we have here is we have an offer that says we reserve the right to move the court for attorney's fees. The acceptance says, provided that, and here's the exact wording of the relevant portion of the acceptance of the offer of judgment. It says, pursuant to the terms of NRCP 68D and NRS 17.115 Part 2, the defendants herein request dismissal of the complaint herein as they intend to pay the amount of the offer with a reasonable time after the offer is accepted. Defendants intend to tender the amount of the judgment promptly. Accordingly, defendants request the judgment not be entered against them and that the complaint be dismissed upon proof of payment. And that request was made of the court. Now, the plaintiff in this case filed a motion.
Why couldn't the court then hear the motion for attorney's fees as the offeror was the prevailing party, determine what they would be, and then your client would have had the choice to either pay the 20 plus whatever the court, if anything, deemed was a reasonable attorney's fee, and then it would secure the dismissal and it would not have a judgment against it, which is the point of that is to avoid being a judgment debtor in the public record and the stigma associated with that. All that could have been played out, right?
Here's how it played. Part of that did play out. There was a motion filed for attorney's fees, which is appropriate in this case, given what happened. And there was a hearing held. And the position of the defendant was that while the court could hold a motion hearing to determine attorney's fees, they have to have a legal basis upon which to award attorney's fees, and that there was no such basis. Judge Avisteri could have made a determination that, yes, there is a legal basis to award attorney's fees, or no, there isn't, and then either party could have appealed. What he did not do that. What he did is he entered an order, and one part of the order said that the motion by defendants to dismiss the complaint is denied. That was not before the court, number one. Nobody moved the court to do that. And number two, I don't believe he has the statutory authority to do that. I think that's an abuse of discretion. I think he acted improperly and beyond his scope in this matter.
So what do you want us to do here? What would you, if you were asking for us to enter an order, what would it be?
I would direct that a writ issue, that the judge acted beyond his discretion in directing the clerk of the court not to dismiss this matter, that the matter should be dismissed upon tender of that $20,000 check. I would declare that the offer of judgment tendered and filed with the court is valid and binding on all parties. And I would direct either that there is no legal basis to award attorney's fees in this case, or that the district court should hold a hearing to determine whether there is a legal basis that gives the district court judge authority to award attorney's fees. And that requires interpretation
of... If we determine that there is a legal basis, if it's a question of law, whether or not an offeror who makes an offer like this may recover attorney's fees on motion under 18010, whether it's a prevailing party for those purposes, that's a legal question, right?
I think that's a question of law. I mean,
yeah. So if we determined that issue, let's say we decided it in his favor, then you would be asking for a remand for determination of whether it was reasonable, the amount of attorney's fees requested?
Yeah, certainly that was not determined. The judge didn't even reach that.
Okay. Conversely, you're saying as a matter of law, 18010 doesn't allow attorney's fees in this setting because they weren't the prevailing party.
They were not the prevailing party. They didn't obtain a judgment. And I think I would have worded this offer differently, quite frankly. I would have said $20,000 exclusive of costs and its attorney's fees to be determined by the court based upon a verified memorandum of costs. And it's very clear that we're intending to get attorney's fees. This offer wasn't worded that way. And it was made very clear in our exchange of emails, which is part of this record, that we were going to object to their award of attorney's fees, and we were not agreeing to pay attorney's fees as part of that offer. We didn't acquiesce to that. We didn't say, yes, we will pay you $20,000 plus attorney's fees, the amount to be determined. We didn't say that. And that's not what the offer says. I think it wasn't an artfully worded offer.
Well, it says we offer judgment to be taken inclusive of costs and prejudgment interest, meaning that's in the 20, on the condition that the right of plaintiff Tule Lake to move for and obtain an attorney's fee award under 180102 is preserved intact. I mean, that pretty much says what their contemplation was, right?
Sure. He has a right to move the court, and he did file a motion for attorney's fees, and we showed up at that hearing. But that should have been the sole issue before the court.
Right.
And that issue is, number one, Judge, do you have the legal authority under the law to award attorney's fees under these facts? And number two, if you don't, we're done. If you do, then we need to argue about the amount. And that isn't what happened. The judge went beyond that.
Are you suggesting, then, that the offer of judgment in this case, the language within the offer of judgment that, at least to some, might be described as clearly holding out the matter of attorney's fees, was simply superfluous to the offer of judgment?
I'm sorry. Could you say that again, please?
Are you suggesting that even though this offer of judgment appeared to preserve the matter of attorney's fees, that it was illusory in nature?
It wasn't illusory. It clearly provided that he could move the court. To me, that means file a motion requesting attorney's fees, which is different than an offer that specifically provides, you agree, defendant, to pay our attorney's fees, we will determine the amount. It doesn't say that. And
I guess I'm not following that bright line distinction that you're making. And I don't mean to burn into your rebuttal time. Please, it's just...
Perhaps he could raise that on...
I think we then... I think we were very clear in terms of the communications between the attorneys that there was no specific agreement that the defendants in this case agreed they were going to pay attorney's fees in an amount to be determined by the court. The issue was... You can file a motion and ask for them, but you could have a legal basis to get them. There was no contract here. There was an oral agreement.
So the answer to my question would be it may not have been illusory. It may have been superfluous, subject to...
I think it's simply poorly worded. I don't think it's a question of ambiguity. There's no misunderstanding between the parties. I think it was simply poorly worded as an offer.
Thank you.
And I think that's where the problem arose. And there really is no case law that I could find for dealing with the issue of an offeree party accepting an offer. You file it with the court. You have a right to demand that the court clerk dismiss the action upon proof of payment. I don't find any cases anywhere or any statutory authority that allows a district court judge to say you have to file a motion to request that it be dismissed, or that even allows the district court judge discretion in that matter. And in this case, the order from the judge specifically said defendant's motion to dismiss the case is denied. There was no such motion filed with the court.
Let's say we agree with you that there was an enforceable offer of judgment that was entered, but that one of the terms of it was determination of the motion for attorney's fees under 18010-2A or B or whatever it is. And then that's up to the district court to make that determination. Is that what you want us to do?
I think that's appropriate. It's for the district court to decide two things, unless you choose to do it at the Supreme Court level. But if you remand it back to the district court, the issue is, number one, is there legal authority to award attorney's fees? And then if you get the answer to that is yes, it becomes, and what is the amount? And we've never argued about that. Never gotten to that point.
Very well. I've chewed into your time trying to establish this. So, Madam Clerk, could you award him an additional 2 minutes so that he preserves that, and then also give the respondent an additional 2 minutes on his time? Thank you.
Thank you, Judges. Your Honors.
Jim Beasley on behalf of Respondent Tule Lake Horseradish. Madam Chief Justice, I guess, Presiding Justice, members of the court. You started off with a question as of Mr. Carucci as to why it would be necessary to, or even advisable, to look into the emails which went back and forth between the parties. When, if you look at the offer of judgment, you know, in my opinion, it's very clear and unambiguous. I think there's something to be gained by looking at those emails.
Why aren't they just parole evidence that are extraneous to our determination?
I think the emails go to conclusively show what the intent of the parties were at the time the offer of judgment was made, in clearing up any possible ambiguity that might have been argued for as far as the offer of judgment was concerned. In that regard, I'd just like to direct the court's attention to the two emails. After myself and counsel on March 27, 2013, had a meeting in my office in which we discussed the preparation of a proposed case conference report, the subject was brought up as to what the plaintiff expected to receive out of this litigation. In particular, the subject of the three prior offers of judgment, each for $2,000, was brought up. When I was asked the question, I responded to both counsel. What we were looking for is the sum of $2,000 or $20,000, provided, okay, that we were able to recover our attorney's fees and costs, which we incurred up to that point in time, which were estimated to be somewhere between $30,000 and $35,000. Okay, after that meeting occurred, okay, pursuant to the request of counsel, I prepared this joint unapportioned offer of judgment for the sum of $20,000, which specifically was conditioned upon my right not only to move for, but to obtain an attorney's fee award pursuant to NRS 18-0102, I guess it was. To confirm that fact, okay, on April 2nd, okay, I sent a copy of that signed offer of judgment to counsel, and in addition, at that point in time, I said this because I wanted to make sure that it was clearly understood between all the parties that, hey, this was an offer of judgment for $20,000 now as to all of the three defendants and not separate offers of $20,000 for each of the defendants.
But you put yourself in the court's hands as far as determining what you might recover in the way of attorney's fees, if anything, correct?
That's right.
You trusted the court with that. So what's the difference in position between you and your opponent here today? I mean, when I read this, I'm like, did the right side petition for mandamus here? Because he's telling us the district court erred and abused its discretion when it found there was no accepted offer of judgment, and that the district court needs to decide whether you get attorney's fees or not, and if so, in what amount. I hear that you're saying the same thing.
That's the position that counsel for petitioner is taking today. That's not the petition or position that he was taking when he filed his petition for writ of mandate and or prohibition. Well,
but is that acceptable to you?
Like definitely. That was my main objective at the time I filed my papers with the district court, particularly the motion for fees after they had filed their notice of acceptance. I wanted the district to go forward with my motion for attorney's fees, to hear that motion. Once the motion was heard and a decision was came down, then whatever amount was decided by Judge Abasturi would be added or tacked on to the acceptance of the $20,000 offer.
And in that, Judge Abasturi may find that 180102A doesn't allow for attorney's fees in this context. You also agree that that would have been an open question under your offer of judgment, right?
In my mind, at the time, it wasn't.
Right. I understand that you
and
think
if this court doesn't rule that, you know, attorney's fees are can be recovered by a prevailing party under 180102 and a judgment is not necessary, then and that issue is deferred to the district court,
right,
and the district court would decide that. You know, my position is that 180102A, doesn't specify that you have to have a judgment. It merely provides that the party seeking the attorney's fees has to be a prevailing party and have not recovered more than $20,000.
So are we in a position where we can simply remand this matter for determination of attorney's fees?
Yes. That's what I would ask the court to do. And I think the court
But you didn't cross-petition, right?
No, I didn't, but no, that's very true. But if you look at the petition for writ of mandate, I think the court has that jurisdiction to do so. Because in the petition, under paragraph 4 of the petition, page, I guess, small 2i, one of the requests that is made by the petitioner in this case is that it deny Tule Lake's request for an additional for an award of attorney's fees as no legal basis exists for such an award. Okay, I think that put the ball in this court, and the court could make the decision that, yes, there is a legal basis, there is a contract, and the contract consists of the accepted offer of judgment. Whether that offer be considered as a statutory offer of judgment or a non-statutory offer of judgment. I mean, it's really clear when you look at the offer of judgment that it was conditioned on the right of Tule Lake Horse Radish not only to move for, okay, but also to obtain an attorney's fee award pursuant to that particular section. It's very, very clear. The emails that followed up, the email that followed up really clarifies that. I will direct the attention to the email that was sent to me to both counsel on April 2nd, I said this, if Tule Lake is going to settle for a $20,000 judgment, I want to make sure that Tule Lake will be able to move the district court for the attorney's fees and costs which it has already incurred. As I indicated earlier, those attorney's fees and costs are upward of $33,000 now. As a sidelight, I think the argument that is advanced by petitioner is really disingenuous. I don't use that word, but they say that, well, we agreed to allow Tule Lake to move for, but not to obtain an attorney's fee award. If the dismissal of this lawsuit was entered by the district court okay, without allowing Tule Lake to move for attorney's fees and costs, okay, if that dismissal was entered, okay, there would be no legal basis or jurisdiction of the district court to even consider a motion for an award of attorney's fees, because the case would be dismissed.
Let me just pause you right there, though, because hearing both of you, and perhaps I'm misunderstanding something, but it seems to me that both sides agree that the district court erred when it did not find an enforceable offer of judgment that had been accepted.
So yes, for different
reasons.
Each
of you agree. Let me just finish what I'm trying to outline here. Each of you agree that Mr. Carucci's client is going to pay your client $20,000. Mr. Carucci's client doesn't want a judgment entered against him or it, but you still want your attorney's fees. So the only issue in play between the two of you is your motion for attorney's fees under 180102, and that is two questions. One, is it legally available when somebody accepts an offer of judgment but doesn't want a judgment entered against them? And if the answer to that is yes, what's the reasonable amount of your attorney's fees? And they're only running post-offer of judgment, you must recall. That's how offers of judgment work. If it is not available, then you would get nothing. Is that a fair assessment of where you are?
I think that's true.
Right, so why now, don't you all, have you considered settlement or a court-supervised settlement conference?
No, there hasn't been that. Like I said, I made the motion for summary judgment based upon the scenario the court just indicated. And then Judge Abascari came down with a decision, and he said there was no meeting of the minds, so there's no contract. Right. I disagree with that decision.
Well, so do they.
Yeah, for different reasons. There are different reasons. I say there's a valid enforceable contract because the offer was perfectly clear, okay, and then accepting the offer, they accepted the offer and they only provided that I accept the offer of the plaintiff, okay, but I want to be able to have that complaint dismissed upon the tender of the settlement amount of $20,000. I believe that's enforceable. And the reason I believe it is enforceable, and this is the reason I go back to what I stated originally, when I emailed to Mr. Carucci and Mr. Peterson, okay, I made that intent perfectly clear. What I said is this. It is not a question whether there's any ambiguity in the language of any of the offers of judgment. The phrases inclusive of cost and prejudgment interest and inclusive of costs and prejudgment interest and exclusive of attorney's fees are for all practical purposes one and the same. Rather, my concern is with the language of NRS 17.1152 and NRCP 2nd 68 subsection 2D, which basically provide that upon an offeree's acceptance of an offer of judgment, the accepting offeree can obtain dismissal of the claims which have been asserted against the offeree and thereby avoid having judgment entered against him if he pays the offered amount within a reasonable amount of time. My problem is not with the dismissal of the claims. And what I was referring to is, hey, go through the motion for attorney's fees, then we could have the claims dismissed.
On payment of whatever's due, the 20 plus what, if anything, is due on your motion.
That's correct. Instead, my concern is with the fact that without the language which I have proposed, once a dismissal is obtained, Tule Lake would not have any avenue by which to ask the district court to award its fees. Looking at NRS 17.115, it seems clear to me that absent the language which I have proposed, the district court under such circumstances would only be able to award Tule Lake its costs under NRS 18.110. This would not be acceptable to Tule Lake. The importance of this particular email, in my mind, is that it clearly shows what the understanding and intent behind the offer was. And that understanding and intent, I believe, binds the petitioners in this matter. They knew what was happening. They accepted the offer, and their subjective intent, undisclosed intent, does not vitiate their acceptance of the valid offer of judgment. And lastly, will this offer be considered a valid offer of judgment under one of our offer of judgment statutes or a valid non-statutory offer? The result is the same. They accepted the offer, and we have the right to go forward with our motion for attorney's fees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Caruso.
Thank you. I need to clear a couple of things up. There basically is a 500-pound gorilla in the room that neither of us has talked about to date, and that is based upon Judge Abbasteri's order. Everybody was directed to reappear before the clerk of the court and reset this matter for trial. That was not the intent of either of the parties, and we really believe that's erroneous. There is an offer of judgment. It was accepted in the amount of $20,000.
Well, the court, Judge Abbasteri, specifically found that there was no acceptable offer of judgment. He indicated that it was conditional, and that's why he reset everything for trial. There was no valid offer of judgment.
Problem was, nobody had moved him to set aside the offer of judgment. There was no pending motion to that effect. But as a matter of procedure, I have a minute here. As a matter of procedure, I think the court's confined to the record in the appendix that we filed with the court. Page 20, the bait stamp page 28 is the exchange of emails between the parties. That clearly provides, there's one from Mr. Beasley's office to mine in a response. And ours provides, you certainly have the right to move the court for an award of attorney's fees, but defendants are not agreeing to an award of attorney's fees. They will oppose such a motion, and the court will do what it will. Certainly, if attorney's fees are awarded pursuant to motion, the order would be honored and the attorney's fees paid. However, defendants will oppose such a motion. That was set the same day we received the offer before the acceptance. It was clear to Mr. Beasley that
I hear him saying, look, he made an offer, you accepted it.
Correct.
There's $20,000 owed to get rid of this, and whatever the court determines is allowable as attorney's fees, if anything. So aren't the two of you in agreement?
Yeah, if anything, that is absolutely correct. That has not been his position to date.
So why don't you stipulate to that and go back and ask the court to determine
the posture
fees?
Is we believe that there isn't law allowing an award of attorney's fees. That's what we disagree about. The district court can decide that, or you can if you decide that it's a matter of first impression and there needs to be some clarification of the wording between the offer of judgment statutes and 18.020.
And if the presiding will allow me.
Yes, of course.
In my mind, even though I hear that you both disagree with the district court's decision, aren't you in a posture where you could start this offer process all over again and get to exactly where you wanted to get without continuing to waste attorney's fees?
Well, I was going to start out coming up here on rebuttal and saying that I would ask the court to disregard all of the comments Mr. Beasley made regarding discussions between counsel because none of that is in the record before the court. And to respond to you would require me to go back to the discussions that we've all had, and I don't think that would lead to a resolution.
It's not a legally based question. I understand that.
I don't think it would based on all the conversations that we've had.
Let me ask you this. Would it be helpful if this court were to say, look, there is substantial agreement between the parties that the offer of judgment was enforceable according to the terms set out in the offer and the acceptance, skip the emails. The sole question presented then is not whether your client agreed to pay $20,000, but what, if anything, is owed in attorney's fees, and send you all to our Supreme Court settlement conference for some assessment of that and see if you could resolve this and stop spending money on fees. Is that a reasonable proposition?
If you added one more clause in there, it would be reasonable, and that is for a determination of whether attorney's fees are awardable, and if so, the amount. Two parts to that.
That can't be done in the settlement conference program. That requires a remand.
It would be helpful to me and I think to other practitioners if the court would give some clarity or clarification on the matter of the right of an accepting party to an offer of judgment to demand that the court clerk enter a dismissal upon payment, because there isn't any
case law. But that issue isn't before us because you haven't tendered the payment and the attorney's determination hasn't been made.
Oh, no, it's in the record. The $20,000 cashier check was tendered 6 days after the acceptance.
Okay.
That was done. And then the judge's order directed that our motion to dismiss the case was denied. There was no such motion. We made a demand in our acceptance that dismissal be entered. So some clarification on the wording of that rule would, I think, be helpful to all practitioners in the state.
Okay. Very well. Both counsel, I commend you both on the briefs and argument, and I urge the two of you to talk to one another about whether or not you can reach some sort of stipulated resolution of this. Barring that, we will take the matter under submission. Please let the court know within 5 days of the date of today if you are able to reach a stipulated resolution of this case, which I strongly urge you to do.